Welcome to the Revitalize My Church podcast, created to help churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. Here's the host of the show, Bart Blair.
Well, hey there, friends. Episode 50 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. I am Bart Blair coming at you with some really, really good stuff today. Excited about today's episode. And thank you for tuning in. If you happen to be new to our show, we hope that the content that you find here is helpful and uplifting. We've been producing this podcast for over 2 years now with the goal of helping churches navigate change and reorient to a new and healthy future. I serve as the director of church revitalization for a ministry called Assist Church Expansion, and I get to host or co-host two episodes of this podcast every month. We release an episode on the first of the month and the 15th of the month. The first of the month is typically a conversation between Nathan Bryant, our executive director at Assist, and myself, sharing some of the learnings and insights and things that we have gleaned over the years as we've partnered with churches through revitalization. And on the 15th of the month, we share an interview, typically share an interview with someone who is also working, leading, ministering in the revitalization space. And that's what I have in store for you here today. I'm really excited to introduce you to a friend of mine named Sean Kennedy. Sean has been a church planter and a church revitalizer or church replanter. His story is really quite amazing. And he also works with a ministry called the Fresh Start Network that walks alongside churches, helping them find a new and healthy future. Sean, as a church planter, planted a church. The church grew, did really, really well. And then the Lord called him actually to move to the Gulf Shores of Alabama, not a bad place to live, if I have to admit, but he got called back to the church that had actually initially shared the gospel with him. And what he found when he got there was a church that was dying and pretty near closing. And just through both the efforts that Sean has put into it, as well as blessing from the Lord and the way that God has worked through Sean and his team, they've seen Church at the Shores completely replanted, revitalized. It is now a healthy, growing, and thriving church. And I think that you're going to find Sean's, his heart is amazing. The story is incredible. And I hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I had having it. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast. Without any further delay, here's my recent conversation with Sean Kennedy. Well, Sean Kennedy, thank you so much for hanging out with me today and recording this episode of the Revitalize My Church podcast.
It's an honor and privilege to jump on with you.
You and I have known each other, or at least been acquainted with one another for a few years now. And we learned early on in our connection that we were both sort of dabbling in the church revitalization space. And by dabbling, I mean that you were like neck deep in it, revitalizing a church and then coaching churches and church leaders on their own revitalization story. And we're going to deep dive into both of those things today. I want to talk about your own personal replant, revitalization, renewal story there in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and also talk about the ministry that you work with, the Fresh Start Network that comes alongside churches that are going through a season of renewal. But let's start today by just getting to know Sean a little bit. Why don't you tell a little bit of your story, how you ended up in ministry, how you ended up where you are today?
Yeah, well, a little bit about me. I'm married, been married for 18 years. My wife's name's Rebecca, and I have two kiddos, McCallan and Margaret. Mac is 8 at the time of this recording, and then Margaret or Maggie is 13. I was a perfect parent until I became a parent. Nothing has humbled me more. So Bart, send me your parenting book. When you write another book, please write on that. I'll read it.
We'll see. Okay.
Yeah, and it's been a great journey. Also, I think you should know that I drive a Vespa occasionally. And
okay.
That doesn't make me a man, but it does make me awesome. I'm just letting you know, you should try a Vespa out. Those are fantastic.
Okay, can I ask you a question? Do you wear a helmet when you ride a Vespa?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
You wear a helmet. Okay. Is it a cool helmet or is it like a dork dad helmet?
Oh, that you'd have to ask other people, but I'm trying.
Okay.
I'm trying.
Okay. All right. Just asking. Okay. Got it. I'll see if we can send some pictures. Okay. All right.
I'll do it. I grew up in Pensacola, Florida with a dream really to become someone who was in sports medicine. I was in a major car accident as pursuing that effort. And while I was sitting on the side of the road waiting for the ambulance, hard to put it into words, but that was kind of a turning point in my life and fully surrendering to what Jesus might have for my future. And I didn't know anything about pastoral ministry at all. I really didn't understand that. I didn't grow up in a church setting. I had one church experience. And so I knew about a school in Georgia and one in New York. And I ended up putting some things into New York, and one thing led to another, opened the door, and I went to college and seminary in New York. And while I was there in seminary, I heard someone who had been pastoring a church in Lisbon, Portugal. He was the first person who ever talked to me about post-Christian context. He shared there are several post-Christian cities in the U.S., like Austin, Texas, and Portland, Oregon, and he mentioned San Diego, California. And I really didn't know a lot about any of those cities, but with a friend, kept my yes on the table. And in 2003, I loaded up everything, moved out to San Diego, started three jobs, and planted a church in University of California in San Diego at a charter school. We set up 300 chairs, handed out 20,000 different invites, and had one family show up. It was amazing. Wow. And so that was a different level of invitation into ministry. I spent the next 2 years really starting to learn what it means to be a pastor. That's a whole other story in of itself. But I pastored that church for 15 years. And I love San Diego. I love the privilege of getting to serve that church. Never thought I would leave. I helped pioneer the nonprofit that you mentioned, Fresh Start. And so I've been working with struggling and dying churches. And the church that first shared the gospel with me reached out and said, would you ever consider moving back here? And I said, well, what do you mean? They said, would you consider being our lead pastor? We think we have 3 to 6 months left and then our church will close. What do you think? Now, it's located in Lower Alabama, everyone's favorite vacation spot. And I said, no, I don't even have to pray about that. Like, do you know what 70 degree temperatures feel like in August? No. I loved our church. I loved what God was doing in our church. And before
I'm assuming, Sean, that you'd grown beyond one family at this point in the church. Yeah.
Yes. We were part of a healthy, life-giving, multi-site church in San Diego. And yeah, really neat, wonderful experience there. Yeah.
And 15 years you said there. So
15 years.
15
yes,
years.
15
wow.
years.
So and deeply rooted in that community at that point.
Deeply rooted. It took us 14 years to save up enough to put a down payment on a house. We had just moved into a house a year prior. And the person who was on the call said, hey, I know that you'll pray about this with your wife. I just should let you know, we don't have any money that we can give you, which, by the way, is not exactly the most attractive offer ever. So I really dismissed it. But for the next 2 weeks, I felt this disruption, felt disoriented. My wife and I started to open our life in new and fresh way. And I felt like this is strange. This is crazy. Every friend that I had told me, yeah, I don't think that's a wise choice. And so I started talking with our leadership team there. And I just really sensed that God was inviting me to take that step of faith. So my wife and I moved back, and in 2018, we replanted the church that we are at now. Now, pausing for a moment just to connect the dots of the story, I'm currently the lead pastor and replanted the church that first shared the gospel with me. And I always say Jesus writes the best stories, and I'm so grateful for that story. But yeah, so we're in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and the church is called Church at the Shores, and we will celebrate 8 years this November.
8 years since you arrived there to replant.
Yes, since our first replant Sunday, yes.
Okay. Well, walk us back 8 years, and when you arrived back in Gulf Shores, Alabama, what was waiting for you there? It was a church that was obviously struggling in decline. They said they only had a short time left to live. What did you find? What did it look like?
People who were discouraged but open. I remember that first Sunday, and I remember looking at the faces of about 35 people, going to my car afterwards, telling my wife, I am so sorry. I do not know what I got us into. It was such a different world that I had left. And I would say that the church itself had a horrible reputation in the community. The previous pastor sent letters to churches exhorting them on their preaching, which is never a way to win friends and influence people. Mm. They had just really extremely limited finances. It was a obvious solo pastor journey with a elder board oversight team that was unhealthy at the time. And so a building that was aging and in significant need of financial investment. So that's what I really walked into.
Okay. Somewhere along the journey, the Lord called Lazarus come out and this church emerged out of the grave. Yes. What were some of those key milestones in the early stages when you began to see that maybe there was hope for this church? I mean, you're sitting in the car apologizing to your wife for what you've taken her from and what you've brought her to. There must have been some moments there that you questioned certainly your sanity and whether or not it was, you know, bad indigestion or the Holy Spirit leading you to this place. But as you began to pastor and lead there, were there any key things where you said, no, I see God working here, and the things that began to reaffirm that you were in the right place doing the right things?
Yes. I really do believe that our entire journeys into ministry have to start with a sense of calling. And so before ever any vision for a local church or a local area, I was deeply confident that God was inviting me to be a part of his greater story and that he was already at work. This is why I always share with people who are going into ministry settings that one of the greatest things that you can carry is holy curiosity. God's already at work. There's already a story. And what does that mean to join that story? So I did have holy curiosity. I wasn't sure exactly how the story would unfold. I said in jest on that first Sunday, and I really do mean this, that either we will end up closing this church, and I believe there's something beautiful about dying a good death, or we'll be a part of a resurrection story, and Jesus specializes in resurrection stories. Yeah. And that's what I'm trusting will take place here. They're wonderful people in a great community with a tremendous, tremendous need. And I really do believe in churches that are stuck, discouraged, and dying. One of the things that we don't talk about enough is rescuing the mission. We think about, I'm going to quote unquote save the church, whatever that might mean for someone. No, there's a mission there. And in our case, almost 100 years prior, two German immigrants opened up their home to their community and they wanted to reach their neighbors. And so I was aware of the daunting reality, but I also was carrying a holy curiosity and I was confident that God invited me into a story. And since I'd already planted a church, since I'd already been in the school of brokenness, I'd already seen up close and personal that what you see is not always what's there. I really did have a sense of expectation that God was going to do something. And fast forwarding, he has. I am humbled. Our church, I believe, is a pray first, life-giving, kingdom advancing, warm community that's loving each other well. We are debt-free, praise God. Mm. We moved into a new space and have completely refreshed that. Conversations and coffee shops are completely different about our church. I remember Larry Osborne, who was a friend and mentor in San Diego, said to me, you know that you're experiencing renewal in the community when people talk about you differently in the local coffee shops. Mm-hmm. And that's happening. We've seen prodigals come home. We have a wonderful team that does a fantastic job of really leading and serving and loving our church and community. And so, yeah, and I'd say this too, and this may be something that seems strange. Why would you say this? I get to be a part of local churches all across the U.S. and in many places of the world. And I want to say, I love being a pastor. I really mean that. It's a joy to serve Jesus and his church. And I do believe that's one of the things that we could do a better job in the renewal journey of coming into churches, really having a love for the community, but also a love for the privilege of being a pastor. And so I really do.
I want to highlight one thing, because I talk to guys that I coach quite frequently on this, and that is, it sounds to me like you know the story of your church, you know the history. And one of the things that I always encourage the guys that I'm coaching is to become an expert in the history of the church. I can't remember, it might have been Mark Clifton or it was Tom Cheney or someone much smarter than me once said, you know, one of the things that's really important when we're leading a church through renewal is being able to effectively celebrate the past without worshiping the past. Being
that's
able
so
to
good.
Look back and celebrate the things that God has done in the past and use those things as a way of casting vision for the future. Yeah. What was it that led the people that started that church in that living room or in that garage or yes. in that bowling alley or wherever it was that they started it? What was their motivation? What was their heart? And can you, as you, to put it in Sean Kennedy's terms, can you rescue that mission? Can you revive that mission? Can you bring that mission that probably got locked in a closet somewhere with the old printers and the old TVs and the old overhead projectors that haven't been used in years? That mission is back there in that closet somewhere. Can you find it? And can you revive that and bring that to the forefront? Let me ask you a question. I think the conversation about the coffee shops is really interesting because I think churches, most churches that are going through a season of renewal would have either one of two types of conversations happening in the coffee shop. One is the negative, people saying bad things about you, or no one mentioning you at all because they have no idea that your church is there and your church exists. What are some of the things that you experienced over those first few years that you think gave people a reason to start changing the way they were talking about church at the Shores?
Great question. I want to just affirm what you said about knowing the past without worshiping the past. It's one of the mistakes I see so often in those attempting to be a part of renewing the church, being a part of the revitalizing or replanting effort. And they spend so much time becoming Sherlock Holmes of the past that they miss the commonality in all of our stories is there is a story that Jesus is writing, and it's his good kingdom story. And no matter what you know about the past, you can always find yourself centered on that. And so I found I want to know about the past, but what's far more than knowing about the past is simply honoring the people of the past. Mm-hmm. People tend to feel more connected when you can honor people by name. And so I could go on about that. But one of the things that I stepped into our community, and one of the things I encourage everyone who's in this renewal journey to do, is to not see yourself strictly as a pastor of a local church, but a pastor in the community. So don't love your church only, have a love for the community. And one of the things that I started to do is every month, and I still do this, I take out one pastor from our area, I buy them lunch, I ask them what are two or three of their wins, I share with them, I'm going to share those wins with our team and our church, and I pray for them, and I tell them, thank you for allowing me to be a part of this story with you. So there is a sense of relationships and friendships within a community, and I think many pastors are miserable because they don't have good friends and they really don't think about some friendships being built within their own community. Also, and you know this so well, when you don't serve and love where you live, that's the phrase we use often, love where you live, like literally love where you live. If you haven't done anything to serve the community with no strings attached, then I'm not surprised that no one knows you. And if they do, they really don't know much about you and they're skeptical. But if they can say, oh yeah, I remember my friend went to Night to Shine in February and they really gave us a wonderful experience by throwing this prom for the special needs. And they didn't even really ask us to come to church. They just loved on us for who we are. And so again, more moments like that build a sense of influence with the community as a whole. So I think it's great to make sure to get to know what's going on in your community. And by the way, I think Bart, you do such a great job of this, even on your social media. Many of us can learn more from you on that. But I do think it matters. And knowing the name of the person who owns the coffee shop and just serving and loving people.
I heard a pastor or someone, I wish I could remember who said it. I'd give them the credit. But my wife and I have had this conversation several times since I heard it said. And they said, you need to learn to love your community even when they don't love you back. That's the Jesus way, right? And we will find as church planters or church revitalizers or church replanters that there is often opposition and tension and stress that comes between you and the community that you're trying to reach. And the true test of your heart is just asking yourself, do I love this community? Will I love this community even if and when they don't love me back? And I think that's the posture that we have to take if we're really going to make an impact. I'm going to ask you to get a little bit more specific about how you, in the early days with a group of 35 folks, I'm assuming were predominantly elderly folks, financially strapped. What were some of the things that you did in the early days to reposture their hearts towards the community that you were trying to reach? I think this is a challenge that a lot of guys face as they're trying to turn a church around is that the level of commitment and sincerity of the people in the church is really, really high, but most of the time they're just trying to preserve what they have because they don't want to lose what they have, where you're trying to recatalyze a vision or cast a new vision for the future of the church. What were some of the things, if you can remember, I know it's been a lot of water under the bridge over 8 years. What were some of those specific things that you felt the Lord leading you to do to lead those people into a new pasture?
That's a great question. I love the phrase visionary shepherd. I think we need more of that kind of visionary shepherd presence. Since I get to serve and lead with Fresh Start, I was well aware of having a clear plan to communicate to people. So I took the first 2 months and I began with a series on Abraham. And Abraham being on this journey, I think it's the perfect place to start whenever helping churches get a bigger picture for what God could do in the future, that often he invites us into things and we're on a need to know basis. And so anyway, I'd walk through that week in and week out. And what I said over and over again is that we are moving toward a fresh start. I think the words create worlds. And so the language you use matters significantly. I remember someone sharing with me, never use the word change. It doesn't land in a way that trust is built. So I would use language like, we will experiment. And so later is longer. We had a long-term picture whenever I talked about a fresh start. And then I kind of laid out a plan, what that would look like. And I could share more about that. But for us, and I would encourage anyone, it always begins and starts with prayer. And I'm not just saying that to say it. I really do believe that any renewal that took place at Church at the Shores came out of God's grace through seasons of prayer. And so we do, like a lot of churches, we do the 21 days of prayer in January and in August. And so we started a journey of prayer. We started to learn what it looked like to be a church that experienced a fresh start. So I hosted several like dream nights and gave them an opportunity just to dream. I shared stories about life change in other churches. I shared with them also about what could happen. I would often finish out the message and then we would have kind of a closing side and I would stop and take about 3 to 5 minutes and I would just let them hear as we were ending, this is the future I see us stepping into. And I would just talk about it, not with any particular goals, just with the imagery. I see this as a place where prodigals come home, so on and so forth. And we put together a kind of a clear plan. Usually, I think for most people on their own fresh start journey or own replanting or renewal journey, moving toward a fresh start Sunday. And so that can happen in 12, 18, or 24 months. It depends on the church and context. And for us, there were many things that took place that escalated the timetable, but it was around 12 months. And we had a Fresh Start Sunday, which for us was driving a stake in the ground. It was welcoming back the community around us to participate. And so When I look back at those times, yes, there were relationships built. I met with every single person. It actually had a multi-generational flair, not just those who were in late stages of their life. I tried to get to know the heart of the community, what God was doing in the community, tried to make sure to lean into different pastors who were around for support and have them be a modified advisory board in the very beginning, also from a posture of humility, gave a clear plan, and really tried to take intentional steps one step at a time. But I said this over and over, and I'll just kind of, I can rest here, is I said, I want to be a part of an only God story. I don't want to be a part of something that just we looked on paper and some things happened that we put on paper. I want God to bring some things on purpose. And I think for all of us, when it comes to serving in the context of renewal, I think we long to be a part of a Jesus-style resurrection. And I believe that language, that ministry to people started to really, really take off. The truth and reality is that of those 35 people, very few are apart today. But it only takes a few heaven's friends to really take forward the vision and mission.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask you two more questions about the church, and then we're going to pivot to talk a bit about Fresh Start Network. And I'm going to ask you to tell us, what's the size of your staff today? How many people do you have serving with you? You started as a solo pastor, and what's your average attendance? And I know that numbers are only a part of the story. And so we're always very clear about that with our podcast and with our ministry. We're not here to try to make small churches bigger. We're trying to make all churches healthier, but clearly growth can be attributed. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. Growth can be attributed to being a healthier church. So what's your weekend attendance now, and who do you have serving on staff with you?
Yeah, great question. I feel that same way, by the way. I experienced my own burnout in the early stages of ministry because I became addicted to numbers in an unhealthy way. And so I love your heart as it relates to that. We are a mid-sized church. On any given Sunday, 600 to 700 people is the number who call our church home. We have currently 5 full-time staff and 3 part-time staff that are a part of Church at the Shores. And so, yeah, that's our current size.
Okay. And the last question is, it's been an 8-year journey up to this point. How long were you into the replant renewal journey where you actually looked up and said, okay, God, I see you're actually doing this. We're getting some momentum. We're starting to move in the direction that I've been trying to push this rock. How long were you in it before you really started to sense that it was going to actually go the way you were praying it would go?
Yeah. There's two things that I need to say. There was an elderly man in his 70s named Victor. And when I first came, I remember within the first week, I gave people an opportunity to respond to the good news of Jesus. He came up with tears in his eyes and he says, I've been in this place now for well over 15 years. And I can't think of the last time someone was given an opportunity to surrender their life to Jesus, to put their faith in him. And he just gave me a huge hug, had a suit and tie on, and I'll never forget that moment. And so now Victor has moved in with Jesus. But this past year, we celebrated 78 people surrendering their life to Jesus and 56 getting baptized. And at the end of the year, part of my own kind of examine of the year is just coming back to those conversations and saying, God, thank you for Victor, who prayed for this, who served, who had a heart for this. And I really feel like we're always standing on someone else's faith and prayers. And so when I think about our church, that matters a lot. I'm going to answer your question in a little bit of a different way. I really do believe that it's not an easy metric to name, but it is a missing space to life change and life transformation. And that is when a local church has the joy of the Lord. I think this is a whole missing subject in renewal, that wherever Jesus shows up, joy shows up. And I could talk about many other kind of ways, but for me, Howard Schultz, who was the CEO of Starbucks, left. The company was going down. and down a direction that they knew they didn't want to stay in. They asked him to come back and consult. And whenever he says he walked into a store, he immediately knew something was off because of the smell.
Hmm.
And so he asked them, have you changed anything? And then they took a deeper dive. And yes, they saved costs by, you know, changing the equipment out. And so they no longer use certain equipment and the way they grinded coffee and so on and so forth. And so he was asked about this whole story. And he said, well, I knew something changed because something changed in the air. And so when you ask me, yes, I can tell you specific moments, but really what it was something changed in the air. There is a strong sense, a smell, if you will, that the joy of the Lord is in this place. And I would say that that took place within, I would say probably within the first 8 months. I started to smell it, if you will. Now, mm-hmm. when I go on, walk into a, let's just say a Sunday morning or something like that, I find myself just thanking God for it because I can see it. I can see people laughing. And I remember someone who was out of Lexington, Kentucky, did a lot of things with a lot of churches. He said this, I thought this was profound. He said, how do you know when a church is sick? A sick church can't laugh.
Hmm.
And a healthy church can't stop laughing. And that's not the only thing, but a component of the joy of the Lord is oftentimes we carry our faith on our face.
Right.
I really do believe that. And so I can name specific areas when this happened, but to me, it was like a turning of the environment and the joy of the Lord was at Church at the Shores.
Okay. That's fantastic. Now, Sean, we only have about 5 minutes left. And I want to talk a little bit about the Fresh Start Network. We spent a little bit more time talking about your own journey than I anticipated, but it's a great story. And I really hope and believe that it will be an encouragement to other pastors that are listening. Just give us the elevator pitch on what Fresh Start Network is, what your role is. You told me before we started recording that your role is shifting a little bit, but how do you come alongside churches and how do you serve them?
Yes. Fresh Start Network was founded by Bill Malik. Bill Malik was a part of seeing 6,000 churches planted in the U.S. and abroad. And he had a heart to see struggling and dying churches experience new life. And so I came alongside in those early stages to work with Bill. We have a wonderful team that does an amazing job. But really, we want to come alongside struggling and dying churches, help them experience new life, help them see that at the end of the day, we're not saving churches, we're rescuing missions. And one of the ways that we're able to do that is we provide relationships and we provide resources as needed. We have the Fresh Start Evaluation where people can get a really good picture of where their church is at in the church life cycle. Every church has a season and every church finds themselves on some life cycle place. And so awareness is a great starting point. We try to work with people, build relationships, and then we give them coaching and resources. And one of the things that's unique about Fresh Start, we've been doing this now for a while, is we've discovered that one of the greatest ways that you see long-term health is through partner churches. There is such a need to see other churches come alongside struggling and dying churches. So what we do is we work with healthy, life-giving churches and help them get a vision, not just for church planting, but for church replanting. And then we partner them with churches that are struggling and dying, either in a friendship capacity or for some of them in a family capacity to help them along this journey of seeing new life in a church that they love and in an area they love. So those are just some of the things we do. Freshstartnetwork.com. We'd be happy to reach out, have a conversation with anyone, and do our best to help them in their journey.
Yeah, we'll link to the website in the show notes. You've got some other resources and obviously contact information and everything is on the website. What's next for you? You got anything fun and happening in interesting happening in the life and the ministry of Sean beyond all the things that you've just shared?
You know, I'm really looking forward to the journey ahead. I am releasing a book in 2027 with InterVarsity Press, and I'm grateful to be a part of the IVP family. I'm going to do my best in this next season just to keep coming alongside of struggling churches and discouraged pastors. That's just such a passion of mine. And we have some resources that we're putting out with Fresh Start Network that I think are going to be extremely, extremely helpful.
What's the topic of the book that you're writing?
I'm writing on.
Are you allowed to tell us? Does InterVarsity let you say?
Yeah. Well, I'm writing on this subject, and this actually, can I take 3 more minutes, because this might help someone who's in ministry, and I'll land the plane. Many years ago, I was in Italy. Someone asked me to officiate their wedding, and I didn't know exactly where it was at first. And they said, "Hey, I know you need to pray about this and talk to your wife. Just so you know, we're getting married in Tuscany, Italy, and we'll pay for everything." I said, "I feel like I heard the Lord speak. Yes, I'm in." Well, I was in Tuscany, Italy. We were at a large vineyard there. And I happened to spend some time with the vine dresser, the head of the vineyard, so on and so forth. I said to him, "Hey, I'm a pastor. We've talked a little bit. You know, I love John 15, but what can I learn from you about what I'm doing?" And he said, "Well, that's kind of easy for me. I see people all the time work in vineyards. And the problem is that they go through the journey and they're looking at what can happen in 3 to 5 years. And in 3 to 5 years, what you get is usable grapes. And you can use them, but they're not what we consider the choice grapes. That occur 7 to 10 years later. That's what we're using for wine and for other things." And as he's talking, everything in me is just, you know, brightly going off. And so there's 2 things. If I had to kind of define what spiritual formation is in 30 seconds, I would say it is the slow, beautiful work of God. We get to participate that through relationships and practices. But I think God changes a life in that way. So I'm going to write on that subject. Okay. And practices.
You're going to help us all be better grapes. That's what
we need to be
better grapes. Okay. Yes. Love that. Hey, we're going to land the plane here because we are out of time. Sean, it's been a real pleasure. I'm confident that we'll have an opportunity to do this again because there's still so much more I believe that we can unpack with you. For those of you who have made it all the way to the end of this episode, thanks for tuning in. This has been episode 50 of the Revitalize My Church podcast. Again, if you haven't ever subscribed wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, make sure that you do that so that you don't miss any future episodes. We release an episode on the 1st and the 15th of every month. It's kind of an irregular schedule, but if you subscribe, you don't miss. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, you can subscribe there, click the bell so that you get notified of any future episodes. Sean, thanks again for hanging out with me today.
Privilege and honor. Thank you so much.